Well, hello, everyone. This is James Dobson, and I want to let you know about a powerful and patriotic movie called The Last Ounce of Courage. It's a family-friendly story about an American hero who stands up for his beliefs in a time of cynicism and fear. I assure you, you'll leave the theater with a sense of pride in our country. I've seen this very emotional movie, and I want to recommend it to you. So bring your church members, your organization, your family and friends, and take a stand for freedom, because that's what this movie is all about. Last Ounce of Courage premieres nationwide on September the 14th. And for more information, go to lastouncethemovie.com and treat the whole family to an inspirational night out.
Thanks for tuning in here on Labor Day for this edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Lou Ann Crane here with Ryan Dobson, and our host is psychologist and best-selling author Dr. James Dobson.
Lou Ann, here at Family Talk, our goal is to strengthen families. And today we're going to talk about one of the most painful aspects of the marital experience in the hopes that it might encourage couples. And we're going to be dealing with something that no one wants to dwell on, and that is the end of life for either a husband or a wife, and how the survivor can deal with the loss of a beloved spouse.
And you know, everybody, not necessarily just those who are in midlife, has thought about this and wondered about it, maybe when it might happen, how to prepare for it. Really, Ryan, though, no matter how much you prepare, there's no real way to get ready for it.
Oh, I know. And I don't even want to think about it. I just want to block that out. And yet we know it's going to happen. That painful separation will occur one day.
So what we can do, Ryan, is do our best to begin preparing folks or even help them if they're in the midst of it. I've watched this process in my own family, and of course, it's a heart-wrenching experience for all of us.
Well, Lou Ann, at times like this, it's helpful to hear from someone who's been there. Mm-hmm. And that's why my dad invited our guest today, Bruce Nigrin, to the studio to share his experience saying goodbye to his first wife, Rosinda, in 2002. The prelude to her passing led to his writing a book called Touching the Shadows. Bruce works as the senior editor of nonfiction books at Waterbrook Multnomah Publishing Group, and he lives right here in Colorado.
So let's tune in now as your dad visits with Bruce about Rosinda on this edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Bruce, it's a pleasure to have you on the program today. I wish it were under different circumstances, but you have a lot that you can teach us and that we need to learn about. Thank you for opening your life on this difficult subject and letting us see where you've been and what you would recommend to others.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Tell us about Rosinda.
Rosinda was a very passionate, vigorous person. The kind of person that gets up early in the morning and goes all day. She was a musician, and most of our years, our married years, revolved in one way or another around her music, either as someone helping with church work, either on staff or as a volunteer, or she also taught for a time in the public schools and private schools. She was a wonderful mother, and we had both grown up in rural parts of the United States, so we had a lot in common related to our background. She'd been something of a tomboy on the farm, and was with her vigorous personality and sort of the vitality that she had, she hated being ill,
sure,
like most of us do, but it was particularly hard for her. So this event in her life caused a lot of changes for her as a person.
How long were you married?
We were married almost 25 years.
How'd you meet her?
I met her in church, of course. She was directing the choir. She was an assistant, and I was back there in the bass section. And I sort of lost concentration during the rehearsal.
Bet you did. Yeah. Now, you have been very honest in this book and in your reporting of that entire experience in saying that you and Rosinda had your conflicts. Did the people in the church know that you were going through some difficulties at home?
That was still a time when it's a little more common now, I think, for people to say, we're having problems at home and we're going to a counselor, or if he doesn't go, I'm going to get him there or whatever.
You hit him in those days, didn't you?
But yes. Back then, I was working for a publishing company. I worked with a lot of authors who were counselors and well-known in their field, and that was the kind of problem that happened to other people. not in my home. So I think we were like many families, many marriages, even today, sadly, where it looks real good for the outside world. And, and on Sunday, you're often the pillars of the church. People are looking at you and saying, I wish my marriage was like that one, when there are problems, secrets.
Yet it becomes, under those circumstances, a very private and a very painful conflict and difficulty because you can't tell anybody about it. Didn't you all eventually kind of come to terms with one another?
We did. She was the brave one, and she was the first one to go seek help. And at that point, wrongly, I certainly felt it was her problem. Mm-hmm. So she went, and it was only after a session or two that she came home one day and said that, you know, Bruce, the counselor would kind of like to meet you. Have you come in?
You didn't have any changes that you needed
and,
to make, right?
I thought, well, that's kind of charming. This person has probably heard about my reputation, and, you know, maybe we can share some ideas or something. I really kind of was set up in a good way. And so we did go in and talk, and I found as the session went on that we were talking more and more about me. Uh-huh. And finally, I said something like, I just wanted to say, I wanted to be sort of brilliant. I said, tell me, when a spouse or someone, you know, you're having a difficulty with is going on and on about problems, and, I mean, it's just going on and on. It's really just kind of like whining. How long do you have to listen to them before you just say, stop? And the counselor just looked me right in the eye, and she said, Bruce, that is a very selfish and sinful attitude. Uh-huh. And, of course, I kept my demeanor in place, but it made me very angry. And, in fact, several days later, I took it out on Resinda because I thought, you know, you're starting to meddle with things that are making me very uncomfortable.
Hmm. But you did get it together.
We went on. It was a long, many years process. We moved in the middle of this, and that kind of distracted us for a year or so. But then, you know, the stuff comes back.
Yeah.
And we went back to work on it. And, yes, we reached a point where we were much healthier and really able to communicate in ways that were much more pleasing to each other.
Tell us about the day she discovered a lump in her breasts and the examination that followed.
Well, we were just in bed. We were reading and getting ready to turn out the light. And she said, Bruce, feel this. And she took my hand and put it on her breast and kind of rolled my fingers over this. Yeah. And she said, do you feel that? And I said, well, yeah. And she said, there's a little lump there. So we went the next day to the doctor, and, of course, there isn't a whole lot they can tell you. He examined her, and he said, yeah, there's a lump there. And then we went on for tests, and within a week or two, we had gone through the whole process of getting all the way through biopsy to the diagnosis that, yes, in fact, this was breast cancer.
And a very aggressive form of it.
The as you know, they test the tumors and so on, and this was one that was in the more aggressive category.
Hmm. First of all, did he recommend a mastectomy at that stage?
Initially, actually, the prognosis was good. The tumor was not too large. There had been no spread, but the recommendation was we do need to go after this aggressively, and yes, we feel a mastectomy would be the way to go.
Hmm. And that is what occurred?
Yes.
And the result of that was what? They were pleased with the outcome. She obviously survived it. And
right. As you know, they do various tests as a part of the surgery to remove a tumor and involving the lymph nodes. And everything looked good. The tests throughout the rest of her body were very positive. So We thought this was behind us in many ways because they had given her such a good prognosis. It was
they did
a stage
not
one.
Recommend chemotherapy at that time?
We did do chemotherapy, again, that was more in terms of proactive approach to this. Mm-hmm. If any of those cells, you know, are floating around in the bloodstream, let's go after them. So really, we got through that initial process, it was difficult, it was hard, but we were really at that point thinking we're going to kind of get back to life as normal. We've weathered this storm, and now we're going to go on. She went back to work, and we were happy that hopefully that was behind us.
Hmm. But it wasn't, unfortunately.
No, about almost exactly a year later, they found another lump in her armpit. And this, of course, anytime cancer comes back, it's not good. And but even at that particular occasion, the outlook, they thought that we had no additional involvement in any other part of the body. So we'll go in, we'll take that out, and but we want to do more treatment.
Yeah. What was the impact of the diagnosis and the surgery on Resinda?
Well, obviously, anytime anything like this comes, and particularly with breast cancer is the most feared disease among women, I mean, it's a kick in the gut. It knocks you back. It, my experience with this, and I know she felt this way too, is that you really realize that things are never going to be the same. Even though you may beat it, you're still going to be wondering every year when those exams come around. What are they going to find something this time? So I think this really was the beginning of what I would call the real deepening of our relationship. We had gotten to a point of doing much better, but now all of a sudden we were in something that was causing us to grow closer together. So I think we talked better. I think we maybe did a little better job of enjoying things, of understanding that this is a serious thing. Praise God, we've weathered it, and it looks good, but we are dealing with something that you know, should not be taken lightly.
It can drive you apart, or you can grow closer, and obviously you did the latter. Tell me what the impact of the loss of her hair and the other physical concomitants were.
Well, the hair thing I found out was very big. I'm still kind of taken back as I think about that experience, because you know, I'm losing my hair a little bit every day, but for a woman, this is a very, very traumatic thing.
You wrote that the loss of her hair was harder for her than the loss of her breast.
I really think, in some ways, that was true. The I think for a woman, hair is like a special covering. It's just a part of their beauty, and to be so presented in some ways naked in public. Now, you know, typically they don't do that. They'll wear hats or a wig or something.
Yeah.
But it's I would just say to men, many men, you know, obviously go through this as friends or spouses of someone with breast cancer. This is an area where you need to be very sensitive and not to kind of do the, you know, the guy thing, which is to say, oh, what's the big deal? It'll grow back, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. She wore a wig, didn't she?
And she hated it. For people who've not done that, who are active and, you know, want to be on the go, that's not a real pleasant experience.
We talked in a recent broadcast about how cancer is such a cruel disease. It's cruel because, for a number of reasons, but because it gives you hope and it takes it away, and you just can't adjust to it and then deal with it. It jerks you all over the place. Did you experience that, Bruce?
Absolutely. To me, it's just when I think of evil as it relates to things like this, that would be another word I would use. Cancer, to me, is just evil, the way it does attack you. It feeds off of you know, systems in your body. It hides in your body. And yes, that business of it coming back, I don't think at some levels we ever really relaxed. That's why life was different.
Well, obviously the disease did come back for her, and she continued to struggle with this disorder and then lost her fight with cancer on January 22nd of 2001. Talk about the passing itself and what the emotional impact was on you and on your children.
Well, I think we were a bit prepared, but you're never prepared. Obviously, when you're dealing with a serious disease over a period of almost 4 years and it has returned several times, you'd have to be kind of naive to not have some thoughts of, are we going to beat this thing? Now, our attitude throughout the whole ordeal, particularly on her part, was, I am going to beat this thing. And so as a result, I hear stories sometimes from other people where elaborate plans were made and discussions occurred before the death about, well, I want you to do this and I don't want you to do that or whatever. We had very little of that because her whole attitude was, trusting in the Lord to help her accomplish this, I'm going to beat this. And she did become increasingly ill, and then she actually died somewhat suddenly from a fall and complications of the fall. So with that backdrop, I was not prepared with a long list of last wishes. We did have several good talks, one in particular. We had a scare about 2 months before she died, where one night we were in bed. She'd actually just come home from the hospital, and she felt terrible, much worse than when she'd left the hospital. And it was the middle of the night. We didn't quite know what to do. And she leaned over to me. She said, I just feel awful. And we'd been told that the cancer had, at this point, spread throughout her body. So she was in a precarious situation. She said, I think I'm dying. And, I'd never had anybody tell me that before. Certainly not her. And we scrambled around thinking, well, what should we do? Should we go to the hospital or whatever? And it was sort of one of those moments where you're grabbing for the next action. Well, I knew what I needed to do. I told her everything that was in my heart that I thought I needed to say to someone who had just made that statement to me, my wife. Mm. And she said a few things, but I think she was a little taken back by it that I took her so seriously. But so I had that chance to sort of do that. But then actually it was actually kind of a minor thing, and she made a good recovery. And from that point on, we really didn't talk too much because we went back to saying, we're going to lick this thing.
Do you ever question God in that whole process, especially after you lost her?
Yes. I think the one of the good things, though, with my faith journey is that we had these several years where there was a lot of time to think about what is God doing here and why did this happen to us and to me. And so there's a certain amount of that processing had gone on. And when you, I think, for me anyway, when I started to deal with that in a deeper way, I had to fall back on God's character and on his overarching love and care for her, for me, for the children, for all of us. And so when I lost her, that was kind of my fallback. It was like, I know no matter how hard I try, I'm not going to get the final answers to these questions. Yes. So therefore, I'm either going to get bitter, and I knew that would not be good. I'm going to try to avoid the anger as much as possible and just throw myself in the arms of my Heavenly Father and say, look, I don't understand all of this. It hurts. I look at other people. This was a woman. This is a typical argument you hear that we have with God. Here's a woman that gave her life, significant parts of her life, to serving God through her church work and many other activities with other people. And then she tried to take care of herself and to do the right things. And then you look at people who don't do that, who abuse their bodies, who just seem to almost laugh at God. And they shouldn't they be sick?
Yeah, and that thought led me to write When God Doesn't Make Sense.
Right.
Because there are just a lot of moments like that when you can't make the pieces fit. They will not fit. You can force them together, but they don't fit. And you come down to just trusting.
Yes, so that has been kind of my go-to position many times when the pain has and that emptiness you have inside of you. You're looking around, you're going, there's nobody, there's nothing that can fill this.
Did the Lord carry you through that experience of losing her?
Yes, as you go through experiences like this, sometimes he's very quiet. You wish he would be closer, and it's a mystery. But there's one prayer that he has answered every time I've prayed it. And I'll pray this prayer. I'll say, Lord, I've got a big hole inside of me, and I want you to fill that. I want you to come and just put something in there. I want you to put yourself in there and pour your oil in there, whatever you need to do to fill that hole. And often, the next thing I know, I'm waking up the next morning. Mm. He has always answered that prayer. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean it doesn't come back.
Yeah.
or that you don't feel it. But when I have prayed that prayer, and it doesn't always happen instantaneously, but he has always done that for me.
And you know he's there.
Absolutely.
You know he's never gone.
Right.
He is there.
Yeah.
His presence is there. But you still have to heal. It's mm-hmm. not unlike being physically wounded by one cause or another. You still have to heal.
Grieving almost can seem like punishment. It's like you've had the death and now, oh, you're grieving. Like this is a horrible thing that could happen to a person. Well, it is not the sort of thing you sign up for every day. But I will say that it's very natural. It has there's a process there that where, like with physical healing, a broken bone or something, this is going to happen. And even the healing may hurt, but it's natural. And if you just let it happen, you will get better.
Yeah. And the grieving is part of the healing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel like it, however. Yeah. Bruce, what is the first thing you will say to Resinda when you see her on the other side?
Well, I will say thank you so much for everything that you did for me and what I learned, what we learned together, and for the fact that you were so brave. Not just with our relationship, but in the way that you fought to stay alive. Because her reason for staying alive, part of it was to be with me and to be here for her children and to serve others and to enjoy the gifts that she had been given by the Lord and to give those kinds of things back.
And what a wonderful thing in the Christian life that you're going to see each other again. And that is the hope of glory.
Yes, absolutely.
The book that we're talking about and around is Touching the Shadows, A Love Tested and Renewed. This was published before Resinda died. And so it does not obviously go into that chapter of your relationship, but comes up to a point of remission at some point. I wonder if you have another chapter that you're going to need to write now at some point.
Well, we'll see. Obviously, many things have happened since the close of that book. The purpose of that book really was to say that to many people who, and most people who have some struggles in their marriages, that hang in there. Sometimes, probably every time, the good stuff is maybe further down the road. And if you don't wait, if you don't hang in there, you're not going to get to it.
Yeah. But the tendency today is to bail.
Yes.
Yeah, let's get on with something else. Mm-hmm. And what those people typically do is kind of careen from one unsatisfying relationship after another because they're looking for something unattainable. They're looking for permanent intimacy, and it doesn't exist in human experience. It always comes with a lot of hard work in building a relationship. Bruce, thank you for writing this book and for coming to share some very intimate details of your personal life and the journey that you've walked. And I trust the Lord will be with you and will bring another love of your life in the days to come.
Thank you.
Bruce Nygren has been our guest today on Family Talk. And Ryan, you know, it was really a powerful thing he said there when he mentioned he prayed, Lord, I have this hole inside of me and I want you, I need you to come and fill that hole. Scripture assures us that the person who prays that way will have an answer from the Lord. He never fails. We would like to let listeners know that Bruce has since remarried to a woman named Lynn, and between them, they have a combined step family of 7 children, ranging in age from 33 to 13. They have 4 grandchildren, one of whom was adopted from Cambodia.
Well, Luann, I know there are people listening right now who have lost a spouse and who need to pray that way. They need the Lord to fill that hole in their life. And if that's you, if you can relate to what Bruce has been talking about, or you know someone who this applies to, know that Family Talk is here to help. We want to be the ones to pray with you and encourage your family. We can even put you in touch with a Christian counselor who can help you deal with the grief you may be experiencing. Again, know we would love to hear from you.
Even here on this holiday, our phone lines are open.
That's right.
You can call us at 877-732-6825 or visit our website, drjamesdobson.org. When you get in touch, do ask about Bruce's book. It's called Touching the Shadows. And in there, he shares his story of Resinda's illness.
And a great resource to pair with that would be my dad's book, When God Doesn't Make Sense. And that also deals with the why questions we all have during the trials in our lives.
You know, along with those why questions, we realize you may have questions about the how of parenting and marriage. And I just want to remind everyone, we have a brand new Family Talk smartphone app. You can literally now carry around answers to those questions in your back pocket or your purse.
And with this app, you can view video commentaries, read about topics such as grief, which we dealt with today. We even have a copy of the Bible right in the app. It's a very practical resource. It's free. It's available for Android and all iOS devices. All you have to do is visit your particular app marketplace and download it today.
Thanks again for joining us, and be sure to tune in tomorrow for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, as we will hear from a special guest about the deception of feminism.
We'll see you next time on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.